It is Thursday, August 15th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival is Thursday, August 22nd through Sunday the 25th. This music festival will showcase Ozark culture, roots music, and local food, as well as organic and fair trade items, art, and exhibits. Tickets and more information available at FayettevilleRoots.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, when you think of fertile ground for jazz, you may think of New Orleans, Europe, New York City, but Azerbaijan. Amina Figueroa grew up listening to jazz in her childhood home of Baku, Azerbaijan. She's released a dozen albums and will close the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series this weekend. We'll hear from her later on the show.
Plus, that extra A in Lake Atalanta in Rogers. Why the lake is called that explained in the latest edition of our series, What's in a Name? And a wilderness water trail inside the Fort Smith city limits.
First, a regulatory board which approved the Clarksville School District's decision to arm teachers and staff with concealed handguns is reversing itself. The Arkansas Board of Private Investigators and Security voted to suspend the license after Attorney General Dustin McDaniel said earlier this month it violates state law. Clarksville Superintendent David Hopkins says he's disappointed with the decision because he believes his training programs were more rigorous than what the state requires for private guards.
We can still hire armed security through another company, but yet the requirements for that security firm is that those individuals have a high school diploma and that they have 10 hours of training, whereas our people were ones that we knew, that we had vetted. Many of them hold multiple degrees. They not only received the 10-hour training for the commissioned security guard, but they received 53 hours of firearms training.
12 other districts have similar programs in effect, but the board yesterday called arming school personnel a danger to health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Arkansas State Police are deploying a new fleet of patrol cars that officials say will help keep highways safer. The cars do not have roof-mounted flashing blue lights and are marked with the state police seal only on the passenger side. Major J.R. Hankins is commander of the Highway Patrol Division's Western Region. He says the modern vehicles come in different colors and have been designed to blend in with ordinary traffic.
Well, you know, we laugh and say sometimes that those blue and white cars have a force field around them. And wherever we're on the highway, it seems like everybody's doing the right thing. And Arkansans say, you know, we see these things, we get complaints on a regular basis. And so maybe we'll now see what they're seeing with these vehicles.
There are 24 new patrol cars. The 12 troops in the state will each get two of the vehicles. The fleet was purchased with a grant from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
The Springdale Farmers Market at Shiloh Square has closed. Paula Bowles, manager of the Springdale Market, says the twice-weekly market did not get enough business to keep vendors at the downtown location. She says there are several possible reasons as to why the market at the Jones Center is more popular for customers.
Probably because of the easy access. For our customers, there's plenty of parking, and the customers like the outdoor atmosphere here. It's easy to park, and it's been in existence for 16 years, and they just like this location.
Bowles says it is likely a downtown market would reopen once Springdale's downtown revitalization projects are complete.
The plan for that revitalization area is to have a market in the downtown area. I don't know that it would necessarily be at Shiloh Square, but somewhere in the downtown area.
Meanwhile, the farmers market at the Jones Center is open Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays from 7 a.m. until 1 p.m.
A new nonprofit in Rogers will open its doors to help women from disadvantaged situations get on a trajectory of economic independence. Dress for Success Northwest Arkansas will hold an open house Saturday at its new location in Frisco Station Mall. Jonna Behrens is co-founder of the Northwest Arkansas affiliate. She says clients will be referred to Dress for Success through area women's shelters, educational institutions, job training programs, and other nonprofits that serve disadvantaged women and families.
Once they have an interview set up, they can come to us and then we will suit them for their interview. So we'll provide the professional clothing and accessories that they need to, you know, make a good impression in their first interview. And also the confidence that it takes, right? The suit brings them confidence. So that's one of the services. And then one of two things can happen. One is they get the job, great. And they can come back, and then we'll provide a mix and match wardrobe to kind of tie them over for the week or for a week. So then they can actually, as they start working, they don't have to make that major investment into clothing.
In addition, Barron says the organization will offer professional women's groups to help educate women on professional issues, such as managing finances or workplace conflict. But for clients whose interviews aren't successful, Barron says that the group will offer programs for helping them find other job opportunities. Barron says the idea to start Dress for Success affiliate in the area came when she was looking for a place to donate some of her own business attire.
And I've known of Dress for Success. I'd worked with them in the past, you know, as a volunteer. And so I was looking them up on the internet to see if they had an affiliate here in the area, and it turned out they don't. And so I looked a little bit more into it, and the statistics in our area are really rather sad. You know, we've got such a big community of really well-to-do people.
Yet the overall poverty rate in Northwest Arkansas is around 19%. Barron says that the rate for women is around 24%. She says that Dress for Success is aimed at cutting that disparity. The open house for the Northwest Arkansas affiliate will take place at 11 a.m. Saturday at 100 North Dixieland Road in Rogers.
According to the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department, a new law goes into effect tomorrow requiring drivers to move over from more than just emergency vehicles. Act 579, sponsored during the 89th General Assembly by State Representative Jonathan Barnett of Siloam Springs and signed into law by Governor Mike Beebe, requires drivers move over for vehicles owned by the Highway Department and its contractors, as well as utility vehicles, tow trucks, or other authorized vehicles displaying flashing blue, red, amber, white, or green lights. Drivers are required to move to the farthest possible lane or position from the authorized vehicle, or to slow down if pulling over isn't an option. Violators of the new law could be fined up to $500, confined to jail or both, in addition to potential court-ordered community service or a driver's license suspension of up to 6 months. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals won their second game in a row last night, a 1-0 victory in Arvest Ballpark in Springdale against the Corpus Christi Hooks. The three-game set concludes tonight in Springdale.
Forecast calls for partly cloudy skies tonight with overnight lows from 55 in Northwest Arkansas to 60 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, partly sunny with highs from 79 to 84. Tomorrow evening, mostly clear with overnight lows from 55 in Northwest Arkansas to 62 in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. Governor Mike Beebe has proclaimed August 12th through the 16th as Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading Week. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The National Assessment of Educational Progress is given to fourth graders early in the fall of every other year. According to the 2011 NEAP, only 3 out of 10 fourth graders in Arkansas could read proficiently. To help increase reading proficiency, the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, in collaboration with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, has launched the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading. This campaign is part of the National Campaign for Grade Level Reading, which is a collaborative effort by foundations, nonprofit organizations, and communities to close the gap in reading achievement that separates many low-income students from their peers, raise the bar for reading proficiency so all students are assessed by world-class standards, and ensure all children, especially those from low-income families, have an equitable opportunity to meet those higher standards. Cherise West-Scantleberry, president and CEO of the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, says the campaign was launched about 3 years ago with the goal that by 2020, all Arkansas children will read at grade level by the end of the third grade.
Third grade marks the shift from learning to read to reading to learn, so that from preschool up until third grade, it is absolutely essential that all of our children read at grade level by the end of third grade so that they can successfully make the shift from learning to read to reading to learn. If you know how to read, you can learn. And all subsequent grades are about learning. And so you must know how to read in order to learn. So that's why reading by third grade becomes absolutely essential. It determines so much. It determines success in high school. It determines success whether you go to high school or to college. It determines literacy and ensures that all of our citizens here in the state of Arkansas are literate and can read. Reading is just essential to just being able to live and be successful in school and in life generally.
Wes Scannelbury says there are communities throughout the state where 60 to 70% of third graders are not reading proficiently. She says because Arkansas is small in terms of population and has a manageable number of elementary school kids, they believe it is doable for the state to reach 100% reading proficiency for third graders. The Winthrop Rockefeller president and CEO says the campaign has four impact areas: parent and community engagement, school readiness, chronic absence, and summer learning loss.
We find or we hear that kids aren't sufficiently prepared for school. So we want to make sure that our kids are prepared for school. Having access to early childhood education is one of the ways in which you can deal with school readiness or preparedness. Chronic absence. You can't learn if you're not in school. So we need to have our parents understand and our communities work with those parents on ensuring that their kids get to school so that they can learn to read. And in some places, chronic absence is just that, chronic. And so trying to reduce that absenteeism, ensuring that our kids are in those classrooms and having and are learning to read becomes important. So we do need that behavior change in increasing in reducing chronic absence in the state. Summer learning loss. There is all kinds of data that talks about how the gap between when a student finishes their classroom training, which is in May or June, depending upon where you are, and they begin again in August. And so having access to quality summer programs, having access to quality after-school programs, having access to learning opportunities that are outside of the school hours, but especially available during the summertime, is a change in behavior, a change in policy, a change in practice that is necessary here in Arkansas so that we can stem the loss that some students have during the summertime.
Wes Scannelbury says they have been able to identify and promote communities that are doing fabulous work with regard to reading proficiency during the past few years. She says they call these areas bright spots. One example is the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which allows about 7,000 children in Arkansas, 5 years old and younger, to receive a new book in their mailbox every month. She says another example is the Our Kids Read program.
With Our Kids Read, it is in primarily here in central Arkansas, Pulaski County. And in Pulaski County, Our Kids Read are working to train tutors, are working with the business community, working with nonprofits, working with seniors, working with high school students, to train volunteers to be tutors in select schools in Pulaski County, including Little Rock, North Little Rock, and the surrounding area. And the goal there with Our Kids Reads, or one of the goals of Our Kids Reads, is to make sure that we have adults and peers who are in these schools working with kids one-on-one on reading.
Assisting the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation with this campaign is Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. The two organizations have had a relationship since 1977.
For us, they were a natural partner because of their infrastructure and their ability to carry out this campaign and their network of advocates across the state and the work that they've done legislatively in just promoting or working on or ensuring that Arkansas has policies that are positively impacting children and families, and particularly low-income or vulnerable kids and families. And so their work with they were really the champions for much of the of the quality of the early childhood education that we have here in the state of Arkansas. And they've been the champions for so much as it relates to K-12 education and even higher education. So their outstanding work, their outstanding reputation, their impeccable track record makes them a natural partner for us at the foundation.
Wes Scannelberry says as part of the campaign, they have formed an advisory committee of parents, educators, and community leaders in order to help increase awareness about reading proficiency. Those involved with the campaign have gathered data and conducted studies on this issue, and that information is available at the campaign's website. An example of this data is the results of the 2011 Arkansas Benchmark Exam. The exam assesses the literacy skills of third graders each April and then classifies them as advanced, proficient, basic, or below basic. In 2011, 76% of Arkansas third graders could read proficiently. According to the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading's website, the Arkansas Benchmark Exam results have shown a steady increase in the percentage of children reading proficiently during the past 6 years. It also indicates that the gap between different subgroups is narrowing. However, 39% of Black children, 29% of Hispanic children, and 18% of white children are still not reading proficiently. For more information on the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading, visit ar-glr.net. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Later on Ozarks, it's not Lake Atlanta, it's Lake Atalanta in Rogers. For our latest installment in our series about area landmarks and how they receive their names, we'll reveal the origin for the man-made lake's moniker. And we'll hear some stories about the lake's past as well.
Gradually, it became developed as different people, I guess you would call them concessionaires because it belonged to the city, got permission to put in a bait shop and fishing pier. Then the restaurant, the lakeside restaurant, went in. There was a miniature golf course that went in. And then a skating rink. And most of that development came in the very late 40s into the early 50s.
Lake Atalanta's past and future ahead on Ozarks at Large. Plus, pianist and composer Amina Figueroa explains why her band is much like family. Turns out her husband, Bart Plateau, plays flute in the band. She'll talk to Robert Ginsburg about her music, her band, and more. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
We said he would have to go back to school or work, and he didn't either. So 2 weeks later, David met him at the door with his bags packed and took his key.
I finally understood that if you think it's not where you're from, it's where you're at, then as we say down here in the South, bless your heart.
I ran to the window and quickly saw the biggest hook and ladder truck I have ever seen. They slowly extended the ladder up to the third floor window that I was working in.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
Tales from the South, including a story from Catherine Churls of Fayetteville, can be heard this Saturday afternoon at 2:30. If you're looking for a somewhat secluded spot to enjoy this unusually cool August weekend, try the edge of Fort Smith. A small channel of water jutting off of the Arkansas River is a 3-mile water trail designed for canoeists and kayakers.
The Powers family owned this land, and they granted a recreational easement to allow us to access the Arkansas River.
Late last month, Dr. Steve Yaney, the president of the River Valley chapter of the Arkansas Canoe Club, brought maps, images, and notes to a restaurant in Fort Smith to explain this portion of what is called the Arkansas Water Trail. He used his pen to point to the spot off of Riverside Drive, formerly Clayton Expressway, where a canoe or kayak can be put in the water. It's called Powers Point Canoe Access.
This is not the main channel here. There are a couple of islands which they also own and have granted recreational easement to that as well. So I'm assuming it's all this land out in here is their land.
The access point is a wilderness spot inside the city limits that's flush with deer, turtles, and ducks. He emphasizes the designated part of the water trail is not the main channel of the Arkansas River, but a side channel that's relatively calm and quiet.
Anybody can paddle this. This is like a lake.
You're not going to run into a barge.
You are not. You are not. Now, you can access it. You know, there are some points where you can access it out to that main channel. And some people do and will. Again, I think this is kind of where we're talking about. So there's some little cut-throughs out to the main, over here. Some little cut-throughs to the main channel out in here. But this kind of just goes up in here and dead ends and just gets very wilderness right here in the city limits.
The Water Trail is a cooperative creation of the River Valley Chapter of the Arkansas Canoe Club, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, the Fort Smith Parks and Recreation Department, as well as several private interests. Steve says there are possible extensions to the existing water trail that could, with work and money, create a water trail that virtually circles the city. He points to the Garrison Avenue Bridge on his map.
And there's a couple of different parks there, Riverfront Park, Harry E. Kelly Park. I think it's all kind of the same thing. But there's a building right here and a nice parking area, which Game and Fish likes their accesses having parking areas, and being city-owned is another plus, but would make for a very, very, very easy access to the main channel right here.
Steve Yaney says he expects a water trail that loops the city will take time, and the River Valley Chapter of the Arkansas Canoe Club isn't an independently wealthy organization. He says, though, interest continues to grow, and slowly, through donations and volunteer work, more access points could be added. And then, using a long lens, he says a trail that would allow people to go further could be a possibility.
And I think other guys paddle bigger sections of this, and we may end up moving it into Oklahoma and down to Dardanelle, et cetera, et cetera. But for now, this is the start of the Arkansas River Water Trail.
This water trail experience may be different for canoeists or kayakers than the experience of putting in a canoe in the Kings, Mulberry, or Buffalo, but for residents of Fort Smith, there's a big advantage, a much shorter drive. The water trail along the Arkansas River can be a workout or some casual time on the river just after work. And Steve says, an immersion into the city's history along the very reason the city exists, the Arkansas River.
I think we're lucky to have it, and it's obviously why Fort Smith is Fort Smith. Its location on the river was crucial back in the day.
Steve Yerney is the president of the River Valley Chapter of the Arkansas Canoe Club. You can learn more about the trail and the Powers Point Canoe Access Point at fortsmithparks.com. You can also learn more about the River Valley and all of the chapters of the Arkansas Canoe Club at their website, arkansascanoeclub.com.
Beaver Lake might be the most well-known, but it's not the only man-made lake in Benton County. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report about the history of a nearby lake as well as the story behind its name.
Recent rains have been keeping water levels high in local lakes, including Lake at Atlanta. The man-made lake rests in a valley located just a few minutes east of downtown Rogers. One of my earliest memories of the area was a classmate's birthday party at Clark Pavilion. The first grade version of myself was confused as to how Arkansas had a Lake Atlanta, because Atlanta was definitely located in Georgia. Gabe Land, director of the Rogers Historical Museum, says over the years people have often omitted that second A when pronouncing the lake's name. However, the correct pronunciation is Lake at Atlanta, and it was named after the wife of businessman O.L. Gregory.
O.L. Gregory owned the big vinegar plant in Rogers. And it went under a number of different names over the years, but for much of its history, it was O.L. Gregory Vinegar. And if you look for vinegar collectibles, you'll see bottles and jugs that still have that name on them. They said it was the largest vinegar plant in the United States, perhaps in the world, when it was in its full production. As that was back in the days, and he had started in the early 1900s. Vinegar business, and that was back in the days when this area had so many orchards. And one of the uses for all the apples that had issues or had fallen to the ground was to send them to the vinegar plant. So it was a nice compliment to the local apple industry.
Bland says what's left of the vinegar plant is located behind a brightly colored water tower on North First Street. The museum director says Gregory had vinegar plants in other places, but he and his wife at Atlanta lived in Rogers. In Greek mythology, Atalanta is a renowned and swift-footed huntress. Bland says in the 1930s, the Works Progress Administration was funding several projects, including two in Rogers. One of those projects was paving some streets in downtown, and the other was to create a lake by damming Prairie Creek. Gregory donated much of the land for the project, with the stipulation that the lake be named for his wife. According to the museum's website, the lake was created in 1936 when the WPA built a high earthen dam across Prairie Creek. Bland says by September of 1938, workers were ready to test the dam. The lake was stocked with bass and brim, and it became a destination for anglers. By 1949, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission drained the lake and replaced the stock with more medium-sized fish, and a fishing pier was constructed from the eastern shore.
It was a pretty simple fishing lake for quite a while, and then gradually it became developed as different people, I guess you would call them concessionaires because it belonged to the city, got permission to put in a bait shop and fishing pier. Then the restaurant, the lakeside restaurant, went in. There was a miniature golf course that went in, and then a skating rink. And most of that development came in the very late 40s into the early 50s. And, of course, the city swimming pool, when one was built, was also located at the lake. And it was, at least in the early years, I think, fed off of spring water, and it was very, very cold, is what I'm always told. So it became just a real center of outdoor activity with, you know, picnic pavilions and all the other things you would expect, along with things that might seem kind of unusual for a park, like a skating rink and a restaurant.
According to the museum's website, from 1957 through 1970, the lake served as the city's water supply until Beaver Lake became a water source. In the 1970s, a stage was added near the old tennis courts, numerous native trees were planted, and the Game and Fish Commission introduced more carp to the lake to control vegetation. In 1985, a pavilion was added to the south end of the park. In 1995, the Lakeside Pool and Activity Center was purchased by the City of Rogers and the Rogers Youth Center. The restaurant eventually served private functions, weddings, and parties, and the skating rink became the Daisy Special Events Center. Rogers Historical Museum Director Gabe Land says when she first came to the museum in 1991, a number of civic clubs were still meeting at Lakeside Restaurant. Bland says the lake also used to be the site of the city's annual 4th of July fireworks show.
We would bring our kids when they were in elementary school. So they were down there maybe into the early 90s, perhaps. And it, like I said, it was a wonderful setting for it. You could just sit on the hood of your car, the trunk of your car from the side of the lake and watch. But we've got too many people to do that anymore.
Bland says one of the best-known stories involving the lake is of a mishap by C. Jimmy Carter.
Not too long after the lake filled, one of the best-remembered things that ever happened out at Lake Out Atlanta was in January of 1940. It was very cold and the lake froze over. And we had a well-known gentleman here, C. Jimmy Carter. Now, he was young then. But when he grew up, he was active in selling medicines for the poultry industry and very involved in founding the Rogers Airport. But at the time, he was a young man, and he decided he was going to drive his car out onto the ice of Lake Ad Atlanta. And he had one of his friends with him. And they go driving out there, and the car spins around, and then all of a sudden the ice broke through, and they both had to be rescued out of the lake, and they had to pull the car out. So that's one of the, everybody, when folks here who have been around for a long time think of Lake at Atlanta, that's always one of the first stories that comes to mind.
Last fall, the city began burning and removing the pool and old buildings located on the south side of the lake. Now all that remains is grass and a portion of a blue wall where the pool once stood. Prior to the demolition, Bland says the museum was able to go out to the site and retrieve various items like a swimming rules sign, a soda fountain, and a toadstool from the miniature golf course that she says may be used eventually in one of the museum's exhibits. As far as the site's future is concerned, Steve Glass, Director of Planning and Transportation for the City of Rogers, says the city has been purchasing land with the intent of expanding what officials are calling the Southern East-West Corridor for the city's trail system. The project will connect the Razorback Greenway to downtown Rogers and Lake at Atlanta.
No designs are complete yet, but we are looking at some trails, some pavilions. Like you mentioned, the aquatic center kind of takes the need for a pool away, but dredging the lake out, trying to restore the lake back to its original setting when it was first built, because there's a lot of sediment in it, those are things that we're looking at right now.
Tuesday night, the Rogers City Council approved paying $225,000 for 20 acres on the northeast end of Lake at Atlanta. Glass says this will be added to the approximately 52 acres the city has purchased during the last year. The council also approved a $997,000 contract with Progressive Trail Design for the construction of trails and courses near Lake at Atlanta. For more information on Lake at Atlanta's past, you can visit rogersarkansas.com/museum. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You didn't have to catch me just because I was running. I'm a bad girl.
Shira E. is a poet, a musician, a producer, and visual artist. Using Kickstarter, she was able to release her latest CD, Shouts and Sparks, without a label. She's been touring in support of that independent release for the past month or so. Tonight, she'll be at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville, beginning at 8 o'clock. Brooklyn-based Shira E. is playing nearly 40 shows in 8 weeks from sea to shining sea this summer. She was in Oklahoma City last night. She'll be in Chicago this weekend. That schedule means she couldn't be inside the Furman Garner studio in time for today's program, but she will be on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large. And you can see and hear her tonight at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. You can find out more about her at her Bandcamp page, her Facebook page, or at the website ShiraE.com. That's spelled ShiraE.com. ShiraE.com.
Half asleep in the dark.
It is Thursday, August 15th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I was going to introduce myself. I know who I am. You want to talk about water?
We've had a lot of it this summer, more
yes.
than we've had the previous couple of summers.
Yes, we have. You know, I heard at work when we had all of the rain last week that it's as though the calendar is running 2 months slow. Which would make Antoinette really happy if she were here.
Well, you know,
we're getting June weather.
We had snow the first weekend of May, so maybe that's where it all kind of went cattywampus.
Yeah, so we're getting June weather. But we're going to talk on Saturday about the water that comes out of Beaver Lake and is the drinking water for most of Northwest Arkansas,
yeah.
A lot of our listening area. There's a thing going on Saturday called Secchi Day.
Yes.
It's from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock at Prairie Creek Recreation Area, and a Secchi disc is a black and white disc that you drop into the lake.
Until you can't see it anymore.
Until you can't see it anymore. And that tells you about the clarity of the water. So in addition to that happening, there's going to be all sorts of scientists talking about runoff and pollution and rain gardens. And there'll be a water trivia quiz and a demonstration illustrating how little drinking water there is in the world.
Right.
Which is probably kind of terrifying.
The first year they did Secchi Day at Beaver Lake, that's kind of what they had volunteers that went out on the boats and did that. And every year it expands to more and more about water.
This, of course, is sponsored by the Beaver Water District that serves more than 300,000 people in industries in Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, and is the source of drinking water, I'm told, for 1 in 7 Arkansans.
Yeah, that's... Doesn't surprise me, actually.
That's a lot. So you can go out from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock on Saturday to Prairie Creek Recreation Area and learn about water.
All right. And it's all free, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Water has been something of a theme this week on our program. Today's story is about the Fort Smith Water Trail and Lake Atalanta included. Going to keep that theme going for just a few more minutes. The Illinois River Watershed Partnership will host a Bats and Blues concert Saturday, August 24th in Cave Springs. The event's blues, provided by Kyle Lee and the Second Degree, on the Watershed Sanctuary Great Lawn at the lake in Cave Springs. And the bats are, well, bats. At dusk, the bats take flight, and guests will be able to share the experience of seeing thousands of endangered gray bats exiting the cave as night falls.
Do they do that every night?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Austin, Texas has a big event where under the, I think it's the 6th Street Bridge, I can't remember which bridge, but thousands of bats will come out. And so this apparently happens there at the lake at Cave Springs, too. Not in the number that you might have in Austin, but still kind of an interesting phenomenon to witness.
And the Illinois River Watershed Partnership is also presenting the 2013 Illinois River Salon Art Exhibition. This inaugural juried exhibition will feature artwork celebrating the scenic beauty of the Illinois River watershed in northwest Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma. Artists will be competing for more than $7,500 in awards. Artist entry deadline is August 28th. Two-dimensional studio or plein air artwork in any medium is eligible. Submissions must be representative of the Illinois River watershed and have been completed within the past year. The 2013 Illinois River Salon Art Exhibition and Bats and Blues are made possible by a grant to the partnership from the Windgate Charitable Foundation. You can learn more at the partnership's website, irwp.org.
Now, switching topics and switching continents, actually, the University of Arkansas women's basketball team has won the first two games of an exhibition tour of Italy this month. Arkansas defeated a pair of Italian all-star teams earlier this week. Now they're on a sightseeing tour of Venice. The regular season will begin back home in November.
Both the University of Arkansas men's and women's cross-country teams are projected to win the Southeastern Conference this fall. The men's cross-country team was a unanimous pick to win the 2013 SEC Cross-Country Championships in a vote of the league's head coaches. And the women's team picked up 11 of the 14 head coaches' first-place votes to be picked as the league favorite. The men's team is the three-time defending conference champion, having most recently won the program's 20th SEC cross-country title in 2012. The Razorbacks have won seven consecutive conference titles dating back to the 2011 outdoor track and field title.
And a musical note, the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale will begin a new series called Main Street Music Nights on Saturday night, August 24th. Jonathan and Kara Story will perform. We're promised plenty of jazz, instrumentals, vocal duels, and more. You can learn more or reserve your spot at the ACO website. That is artscenteroftheozarks.org.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival. It's August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes that include passes to the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late-night passes, and tickets to the main stage shows Friday and Saturday nights at Walton Art Center. Performing artists include Del McCorry Band, Iris Dement, Jerry Douglas, and others. Registration and information available at KUAF.com. The winner will be announced tomorrow at noon on Ozarks at Large.
More music now. The KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series concludes its 15th season tomorrow night in Walton Art Center's Star Theater in Fayetteville. The Amina Figueroa Quintet will close out the season. Amina's most recent CD, 12, is, not surprisingly, her 12th recording. The CD features all original material, as has become the norm for the native of Azerbaijan. The quintet has been featured on the main stage of the Newport Jazz Festival and is a fixture at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. This week, Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, heard every Friday and Saturday night at 10, talked to Amina Figueroa.
You grew up in a very interesting area, not exactly what is considered a jazz mecca in the world. You grew up in Baku, Azerbaijan, and I understand that you began studying music at a very, very young age.
That's right. I started very young. Indeed, I was two. Music was an important part of our family. Although I'm the only professional musician in the family, everybody loves music, appreciates music, plays an instrument. Also in a country and in a city, music is, I mean, you can't imagine anything without music. It's a big part of our life, and although it's hard to imagine, of course, Azerbaijan is not a jazz mecca, but it's, interestingly enough, it's very jazz-minded culture because of the folk music based on improvisation. My mother was a jazz fan, my uncle was a huge jazz fan, and I grew up listening to lots of recordings by Oscar Peterson and Duke Ellington, lots of great jazz musicians were always present in house. At the time, I was interested in jazz and I loved it, but I did not know that I could play it. Somehow, it remained a mystery to me. And but I composed a lot, so I knew that composition would be someday part of my life. But at the same time, I was playing the competitions, classical concerts, so my career was, in fact, in classical music developing really well. So it was only later when I, in fact, changed into jazz.
I know that your most recent three recordings, everything on these recordings is original music, so composing was always a part of the formula.
I have to explain that a little. When I was at first at school and then at the conservatory, I had the same teacher for chamber music who was an incredible cellist. As maybe you know, famous Rostropovich is also from Baku. So as my teacher, they were they used to be good friends before Rostropovich moved to U.S., and my teacher had incredible, his name was Amshilevich, and he was incredible teacher, but he was incredible musician too. So at a certain point, we became colleagues and we started playing together. And he had such a beautiful sound on his cello that inspired me to write for him. So this is what I did most in classical music, is that I wrote two pieces for piano and cello.
And it's very apparent as I listen to your music that the inspiration for you musically seems to come directly from life. If I can give an example, I'll refer to your most recent album, 12, which happens to be your 12th release. The title is apparent when you hear the music because it's this sort of forward motion, like on the go.
Life is full of inspiration. Everything around us is so beautiful and interesting, has so many dimensions. And also to me, everything is sound. Everything has a sound. Every color, every movement has a sound. There is a story, and I describe it musically. It's just there is no video. That's the whole thing. And yes, the most of my inspiration, say 95%, comes from life.
Speaking of inspiration, it so happens that your husband is also your bandmate. And I wonder, how did the dynamics of having your spouse as a bandmate work out?
Oh, great. We don't, we don't see each other, how to say, we are strictly bandmates on stage, and we're a family at home. When I was growing up, listening to, I've listened a lot of, at a certain point to Herbie Hancock, and who was and is one of my greatest inspirations. And I was listening to the period when they had flutists in their project.
Oh, right, yes.
And it was Hubert Love. And I loved the sound of the flute in the band. That was always so interesting to me. And later on, I just married a flute player that was so interesting for me all my life. And then it happened that I married a flute player. So it's kind of...
this line between family and bandmates. You've worked so much with these guys. They must be almost like family as well, your entire band. And it's a great band. I mean, everyone seems to have enormous ears. Everyone is always listening to one another. But you have Ernie Hams on trumpet, Mark Momas on tenor sax,
mm-hmm.
and your husband, as we mentioned, Bart Plateau on flutes, and Jerome Vierdag on bass, and Chris Buckshot Strike on drums. So
that's right.
I'm wondering, do these guys provide inspiration for your writing?
Definitely. You know, one of the things is, of course, that those guys are so good, I don't have to think about them much when I write, because whatever I write, they can play. At the same time, of course, their styles and the way they play, the way they are, of course, it inspires me. That's why on my previous, one of my previous albums, there's this called Ernie Song. Everybody gets his own piece, even if it's not named after in a way. And so there are many pieces, of course, written for my musicians. But, you know, having a very tight band, I was inspired by many, many, many great bands. And there are many great examples in the jazz history of absolutely wonderful bands. And it's like a good marriage. You can't fake the chemistry. And that's what you have with the band when you play together a lot. And when you travel and when you're on the road, it makes it indeed tight. And indeed, it makes it feel like a family.
Amina Figueroa will perform with her quintet tomorrow night at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville as the final performance in the KUAF Summer Jazz Festival. Doors are scheduled to open at 7:30. The music begins at 8. For more information about the concert, KUAF.com. For more information about all kinds of jazz in the region, digjazz.com. Amina Figueroa talked to Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, which is heard every Friday and Saturday night at 10 on KUAF.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, President Assad has always said the conflict in Syria is not a popular uprising, it's terrorism. He may finally be right.
The Al-Qaeda affiliates have been able to create a presence that, at least in the eyes of many Syrians, they hope can eventually tip the battle in their favor against the Assad regime and overthrow it.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now in just a few minutes, beginning at 1 on KUAF. Here and Now in just a few minutes, beginning at 1 on KUAF. Performance Today is next on KUAF, beginning at 8 o'clock.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been away for a little bit.
Yeah, about a week.
Good vacation?
It was a good vacation. Enjoyed the sun down in the Cayman Islands. So,
rub it in.
I know. I hear it rained quite a bit while I was gone.
Actually, I don't think anyone who is in this area the past week, there was flooding. There was a pretty big golf tournament in Bella Vista that was flooded out. So there were some inconveniences. There's no doubt and some damage done. But August can be brutal anyway, and the temperatures have been incredibly.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah. I came home to my grass is almost up to my
yeah,
knees, and I had to weed my flower gardens yesterday evening. I know,
yeah.
In August.
And as we heard on the program yesterday, in the 40 years that the Buffalo River has been a national river, the Upper Buffalo has been floatable once. And this August, not only was it floatable, it was too high at some points.
That's crazy.
It is unusual. Now, you're back from vacation just in time for us to get into what for us is a busier than usual August as well. Roots Festival, of course, is next weekend. We have the giveaway tomorrow on the program.
Right. So you have a few more hours to register to win tickets to that festival.
And it's two to everything. It's two to the Thursday night kickoff. It's two to the main stage shows, and it's two to the late nights that at the venues around town.
It's a great giveaway.
It is. So you can register. One winner gets two passes to everything.
Right.
We'll do that tomorrow on the noon edition of Ozarks at Large.
And then we have our live show next Friday from the Fayetteville Public Library, a special Fayetteville Roots Festival.
That's right. We did it last year from the library, the noon show live. And if you remember last year, Steel Wheels kicked off the show live in the Walker Room.
I loved them.
Yes. The David Grisman band was there. We had Still on the Hill. We're going to do it again this year, still firming up the musicians, but it will be a live production. You'll be welcome to come be in the studio audience in the Walker Room at the Fayetteville Public Library on Friday, a week from tomorrow.
Right. And then Sunday.
And then a week from Sunday, another live production.
Right. Tales from the South, which is a production of KUAR.
Right. Usually recorded at the Starving Artist Cafe in North Little Rock. And they've gone out and recorded some remotely before, Eureka Springs and some other places. But this is their first live broadcast.
Right.
So it will be an hour long. Some of the musicians from the Roots Festival will come back into the library Sunday afternoon at 3. Some food trucks from Fayetteville are going to be outside. There's going to be a lot of fun. But we'll have the broadcast from 3 to 4 on KUAF. Then the storytellers will be edited down, and in 5 or 6 weeks you'll hear that edition on Tales from the South, as will all the other stations. But this will be a live, first ever live broadcast for Tales from the South. They're excited. We're excited. It's all going to take place at the Fayetteville Public Library. All right. So a lot happening between now and Labor Day.
That is a lot. I come back from vacation and you're going to make me work.
Well, sorry about that. Let's see. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We should do a station identification. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers.
Bentonville.
Okay. Go with the big one. All right. Christina, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And one other programming note about this weekend. Coming up Saturday at noon on KUAF, it's a Humankind special called Stressed Out Students. The documentary from Humankind examines the epidemic of high anxiety among secondary school students in this era of high-stakes testing and sharply increased competition for the limited pool of slots available at top colleges. The documentary will also look at positive coping skills that can help kids navigate this difficult environment. You can join KUAF for the Humankind special, Stressed Out Students, Saturday at noon on 91.3 FM KUAF. Don't forget, you can hear Humankind every week on KUAF Sunday mornings at 6.